Okay. Good morning, everyone. Hope you're all doing well and you're awake. If not, I'll try to wake you up. I tend to move through my presentations quickly. I have a lot of content here to present, so please stay tuned. Bruce, now you put the presentations up for people to that attend. Okay, so the presentation, some of my slides are a little dense, so I'm not going to completely walk through everything that's said on them, so they will be available via Bruce's website. And just to give you a quick background, my name is John Moore, Shellmark Research. Shellmark Research is an IT analyst firm. I founded about a year and a half ago. I was an IT analyst in the manufacturing space and ran the enterprise group of analysts for an analyst firm in Boston called ARC Advisory Group. That was focused on just manufacturing. Manufacturing got boring for me. I'd been there in that market, in the software enterprise market, for about 15 years and said, okay, where's something interesting happening? I stumbled into healthcare, started peeling the onion, and went, oh my God, what a mess. And ever since then, I've had nothing but fun because there's just so many things that need to be addressed in this particular market sector. And there's just some really, really interesting problems that have huge societal benefit. So with that, when I founded Shellmark Research, I decided what I would like to do is look at consumer-facing healthcare, IT. And the reason for that is there's just a number of different trends occurring in the market where, frankly, the consumer is going to have to take on more accountability for managing their health. The trick is, how do we provide the consumer effective tools in technology to help them actually manage their health and manage the health of their loved ones? So, PHRs is one of the first areas we tackled for research and published a market report at the end of May in 2008. So, three main takeaways. First, where is the PHR market today? For those of you that don't know what PHR means, it is personal health records. And that is something that a consumer can use to manage their health records. Okay, I will then go into talking about the advent of health clouds. If you're familiar with IT, cloud and cloud computing is what I'll be talking about, and I could just call them health clouds because it's cloud computing applied to the healthcare sector and the implications of those clouds. And then lastly, I'll talk a little bit about the trajectory. So some of the macro trends that are reshaping healthcare today certainly is the growth in consumerism in healthcare. The most recent report that was just published by Wyatt Consulting Firm, who does consulting for HR for large multinational companies, the number one thing that companies are doing in 2009 is focusing on employee accountability for their health. So they're going to be pushing more and more on the employee to take direct responsibility for managing their health, managing their chronic diseases, et cetera. On top of that, you're also seeing the rise in what are called CDHPs, which are consumer-driven health plans. And that's basically higher deductibles and the consumer having to take on much more of the expense. You're also seeing the disintermediation of care when you've got the MinuteClinics of the world starting to pop up, whether it's in a CVS or a Walgreens or it's in Walmart. Walmart now has 30 retail clinics. CVS was up to about 500. They're scaling back. They're going to be at about 400 by the end of by the time the summer rolls around. You also have e-visits. You're getting more and more payers actually sponsoring or paying for e-visits. And those are electronic visits that a physician and a consumer conduct together via email. You have medical tourism, and you have virtual labs where people are actually doing their own labs or requesting their own lab work through their physician, but they get the results sent to them and not the physician. You also have information liberation, the traditional of, say, PubMed, Mayo, WebMD, but you're also starting to see crowdsourced information where people are joining in specific disease communities. There's one site called Patients Like Me where they founded by two brothers who had a third brother that had ALS. So they founded this community to help those with ALS, which is a death sentence. You get ALS, you're going to die. So they brought this together just to help people deal with that and their loved ones deal with a loved, someone with ALS dying in their family. So that from that, they've expanded into mood disorders and a number of other diseases. They're now getting into oncology. Okay, you've got the blogs, you've got the Twitters, you've got the stimulus bill, the last macro trend. Huge amount of money going into healthcare, and a lot into healthcare reform. Was it $674 billion for healthcare reform? There's $20 billion going into healthcare IT. It's a tremendous amount of money going into the market, but awfully fast. And comparative effectiveness, that's really a big core piece of healthcare reform. That's data-driven. That's going to need lab work. So while consumers increasingly are going online for health information, this is based on the Pew Trust, Charitable Trust Internet survey that they do every year. Here's some of the numbers in terms of how many people actually go online to search for info, for information as it pertains to health. Huge percentages here. Even with a 60-plus crowd, over, you know, close to 70% are going online to get healthcare information. But few manage their health records that way. If you look at how people actually manage their records, only 30% are actively managing their health records today. Certainly the vast majority of it is in paper form. We see a very small percentage using either desktop apps or web-based apps. So when you break down these numbers, you got about 3.3% are using some sort of internet service for managing their personal health records. And that adoption varies widely among the internet-based solutions. Kaiser Permanente is clearly the standalone leader. If you want to see what's going to happen in this market, follow what Kaiser Permanente is doing. They have what is called a tethered PHR. It is tethered to their EMR, which is by Epic. It is called MyChart, but they've done a fabulous job in rolling that out in their company and rolling it out to the consumers. I was in Washington, D.C. last week at a meeting, and Kaiser Permanente was there, and they presented to me some numbers. They now have 47% of their members that have internet access and can sign on to the MyChart now using it today. 3 million members, 47%. That is a huge, huge percentage. Last year, they pushed 17 million lab results to those members. It's real, and that's actually the number one thing consumers like. They like making the online appointments. They like doing the refills online. They like doing a quick consultation with their physicians. Number one is getting the labs. They go in the morning, they get tests, they get the labs. By the afternoon, they typically get those results delivered to them via email. They get a notice, they come back, they log in with their password. Boom, there's their lab results. And they have the content behind the lab results to explain what those lab results mean and to track and trend it over time. Okay, the PHR market, when it first started, we had all these little small companies, the WebMDs and much smaller companies than that, all going direct to the consumer. Absolute dead end because they couldn't get the data. So what they've done now is the market has shifted where either the PHR companies are going towards the employers and health plans or they're going to the providers. It's a very high barriers for small companies, these PHR companies, to go to the provider market because the provider solutions are typically tethered to the EMR. It's an EMR that's basically repurposed and refaced to face the consumer, but it is part of the EMR system. The employer and health plan markets are very similar, and the consumer plays are just, I mean, this 25% here are companies that really aren't paying much attention to it. Okay, there are three dominant models. The direct-to-consumer, it's all about the consumer managing the records directly. Consumer has full control. Very small companies in this market, little adoption. The only one big one in here is the 800-pound gorilla WebMD. The payer or employer-sponsored markets, it's all about lowering MLRs, which are medical loss ratios. Therefore, they're talking about health risk assessments and creating incentive plans to make sure people that have a chronic disease stay in compliance. And those that may be trending in the wrong direction, get them to trend back in the right direction. There is some pretty significant savings here. One of the early adopters of PHRs, a company in Boston area called EMC, it's in the IT space. Fairly large company, do data servers. They have been doing PHR work since 2005, I believe, is when they went live. And in those 3 years since then, they can demonstrably point to $50 million in savings for their company by having their employees use a PHR. The savings come from being able to negotiate lower rates with the insurance providers because they're able to show, here's our population, here's our health risk profile, here's how we're helping to manage that health risk profile and lower it. And then last, we have the provider sponsored, which is all about consumer retention. The providers are looking to retain those consumers, have them keep coming back to their particular facility, hospital, IDN, for services. Now, what we're starting to see coming into the market now is what I would call a utility service model for personal health records, and it's all about creating an ecosystem. We have data sources, which could be anything, any data source. It could be yourself putting in information. It could be your biometric device. It could be your hospital. It could be your primary care physician. It could be the imaging lab. Doesn't matter. Any data source goes into a secure repository where it's aggregated and identified to you, the unique individual, that you manage that data source. And then there's applications that can be built on top of that to access that data. I have a number of attributes and pluses in my, you know, the pluses down here as to why this is good. And when you look at it, this is really the cloud I mentioned earlier in cloud computing. The three big plays we have right now are Google Health. You probably have heard about that one. Microsoft has a play as well called Microsoft Health Vault. And then there is an employer-led one as well called Dossier. Okay, the employer-led development. I would call it an employer health fog. I was hoping to get some pictures, but I didn't have time for this representative dossier in a fog. Really, what the purpose there was, they were going to create an ecosystem to support the health programs of their self-insured large employer companies. They've got companies like Applied Materials in there that's a member. They have British Petroleum, Sanofi, Cardinal Health. Who else? We've got Intel, Pitney Bowes. And the most aggressive of them all has been Walmart. Walmart's also a member of the Dossier Consortium. The model, each of these founding members put in $1.5 million, and then there's going to be follow-on subscription fees based on the number of employees actually using the service, the Dossier service. The technology was built on the Indivo Health platform, which was developed as an open-source platform at Children's Hospital in Boston with a Children's Hospital Informatics Program. They've been in this market for over 2 years now, and they have very, very little to show, extremely slow rollout. They only have one ISV and one member live today. The ISV is WebMD. When I say ISV, that's independent software vendor. That's WebMD, and the member live today is Walmart. They've really suffered with some major governance challenges because all these big companies have a slightly different spin on what they want to see. Unfortunately, they're still lacking what are called the APIs, the application programming interfaces for ISVs to develop new and interesting solutions on top of the Dossier platform, which I think is going to continue to hinder them. And that's what leads to this kind of mapping when you start looking at, okay, here's the ecosystem. Because really, these clouds are about creating ecosystems. So on your left-hand side, you have data sources, whether it's claims, medications, labs, clinical, et cetera, biometric devices. And on the right side, we have the various services that a consumer, or in this case, the employee, can invoke to help take that data, make some sense out of it, and make it actionable. Okay, Google Health is, I would call, a thin cirrus cloud at this point. It's all about Google creating more stickiness on the web, having people have more reasons to go to a Google website. It's making Google just ubiquitous on the net for anything you need, whether it's Google Docs, you know, in competition with Microsoft Office, you know, for doing documentations and creating docs, or it's Google Email, and in this case, it's Google Health. The platform has some very basic PHR functionality tucked within it. They are only today supporting one standard, and it's a modified standard of that. It is the CCR standard, Continuity of Care Record. And it's only supporting, at this point, structured data. They've had modest efforts to date. They rolled out in May of 2008. They have a very small team, about 25 people or less. And because of that small team, they haven't really done a lot since they actually did the launch in May. I think part of the problem right now for them is because they're limited to structured data, they're not getting the big data sources because most people are using CCD. But, you know, with that small team, lack of anything really happening terribly interesting there at Google Health, some people are beginning to ask, are they really serious? Here is the ecosystem, though, that they've built. I mean, it's decent size. As you can see on the right-hand side, I mean, on the left-hand side, you got quite a few data sources. Some of the big ones are like Quest Diagnostics. You have Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts is in there. You've got Beth Israel Deaconess, also Cleveland Clinic, and CVS's MinuteClinics. All those can take data into a Google Health account if the consumer wishes to pull, you know, establish an account and have that data pulled in. On the other side, you have PHRs. You certainly have a number of health and wellness type applications like the American Heart Association or Livestrong from the Lance Armstrong Foundation, and a variety of other miscellaneous services like Pillbox for helping you with compliance to your medication regime. Health Vault, I would call a thundercloud. They have put enormous resources. This is the Microsoft initiative. They have put enormous resources into this. They've been very, very aggressive. Frankly, they want to dominate the healthcare market, is my opinion on this, both on the consumer side and the clinician side. They're driving consumer, for them, it's about driving consumer traffic and ad revenue on the consumer side. But on the other side of the fence, when you start looking at what they're doing in the clinical space, it's really about selling more Microsoft products. It's all built on top of the Microsoft stack, but they've been very open about providing development tools for developers to actually create applications that can leverage the Health Vault data repository. If you remember, I had the data and then the data repository, data sources repository, and then the applications. What they do is, from that data repository, they layer on top of that what's called the APIs, the application programming interfaces, to access that data. But also they create an SDK, a software development kit, allowing developers to create software applications that can leverage the Health Vault system. That's true for all of these clouds, by the way. Very aggressive strategy, huge investment of resources. It's hard to get a clear count as to how many people are directly involved in Health Vault because they're kind of shifting around within the Health Solutions group at Microsoft. But the most recent reports I had today were, last week, they're up around 700 people in the Microsoft Health Solutions group today. That's a lot of developers. Okay, they're targeting the data sources. A real interesting play here is Amalga. As an aggregator, Amalga is a technology that they acquired and rebranded. It was called Aziki. They picked it up from MedStar in the IDN in the Baltimore area. And they're actually going out and selling that to a number of different hospitals. They're working with New York Presbyterian with this. They're doing the Wisconsin Rio using the Amalga. And what they're going to be doing is being able to get that rich clinical data and serve and use Health Vault on the back end as the repository and use Amalga as the go-between. So that's another way that they're going to be getting data into their system. The CCD standard's been very good for them. Biometrics, they were the first one to come out with biometrics. What I mean by that is a consumer can have a blood pressure cuff at home, take a measurement, download it through the Connection Center, a little widget that they built, right into their Health Vault account, and then track and trend their blood pressure. It can be glucose, it can be weight, it can be peak flow. But they can track and trend that in their Health Vault account, and if they want, share it with a physician. Both Google Health and Dossier will be introducing the same functionality with regards to biometric devices in the future. They signed on with the Continua Alliance for doing that, which is a consortium. But we won't be seeing that until probably mid-2009 for starters. Okay, with the ecosystem, here is the ecosystem of Health Vault, as you can see. And I haven't updated this in a couple weeks. I probably could add a few more on either side. But a number of different data sources on one side. They just announced, I think this week, Valera Health, I think was the name of the organization, four hospitals and IDN. I forget exactly where they're located, but they just joined on to the Health Vault as well. And then on the other side, you have all the different tools and solutions that you can use as a consumer. If you wish, you can invoke those different applications to help manage and make that data that's coming into your personal health record actionable. So, looking into the future, Health Vault is no longer a standalone property as I see it in the future, say 2-3 years down the line. I believe that HealthVault will be subsumed into the MSN Health website, which is basically their big health content website, similar to Yahoo Health. And I also believe they're going to maintain very strong clinical underpinnings, and that's through that Amalga I was talking about, and leveraging the HealthVault both on the consumer-facing, but also through Amalga clinical-facing. Google is going to focus on wellness. They're not going to be as clinician-heavy. They're going to be really healthy consumer-centric. They're going to go to an ad revenue model, I believe, at some point. It's going to be ads outside of your core health account, but there will be ads when you do, say, a Google search on given health terms. I believe Dossier is going to fade. They're certainly not an influencer in the market anymore. When they first launched or were first announced, there was a lot of buzz around Dossier because all those employers represented 8 million employees, huge market. But Dossier is moving much too slow. These other Google and HealthVault are definitely getting all the attraction of the software developers. Okay, but the biggest challenge for all these is, you know, getting the data. How do you get the data into one of these accounts? Because consumers aren't going to enter it themselves. It's too much of a pain in the ass for most people. Okay, so do we turn to HIEs and RIOs? HIEs, health information exchanges, typically between hospitals and IDNs. RIOs are regional health information organizations, which are typically government-sponsored. Can these be the data sources? Certainly, there's hundreds of millions of dollars in stimulus funding being poured in to this market. ONC, as part of the stimulus bill, got $300 million right off the bat to put specifically into exchanges. That $300 million doubles the size of the exchange market today in one fell swoop. Right now, the market's about $135 million a year. Okay. Really, they're going to be looking at shovel-ready regional health information organization programs. We'll see what happens. I'm not very encouraged by it. I think it's too much money too fast because these RIOs haven't been terribly successful. But you do have very strong state support for RIOs. Every state has something going on, that's something being sponsored in some fashion. The HIEs, as I mentioned, were sponsored by IDNs. It's all about competition, getting physicians more affiliated to a given hospital by providing them richer data to those affiliated physicians. One of the interesting things happening in this market is the Social Security Administration. They have an 18-month backlog for disability claims, and it's creating all sorts of havoc in the market. They're very, very interested. Can we use exchanges to help facilitate the whole disability claims process? They themselves, I think it's $500 or $600 million, they plan to invest in this through the Social Security Administration just to address that one issue. So here's even more money coming into this market. But one of the important things for this audience, lab data is one of the first things that goes liquid. That's what people try to exchange first through clinical messaging, whether it's an HIE or it's a RIO, it's lab data. One of the first things to get moved around. Okay, as I started to hint to earlier, they're very challenged, these HIEs and RIOs. There are very few RIOs live today. There's roughly 130, depending on how you count and what you consider a RIO, there's around 130 to 140 RIOs today that have a name, have a brand, you know, they're in existence in some form, and have a group that meets regularly. Only 7% of those are live, and this is after several years. There was a spectacular failure with the Santa Barbara RIO. It was, live for 8 years, and it collapsed because it never got it right. Spent $10 million of the California Healthcare Foundation's money just to blow up. Governance and data ownership issues are the big, big problems here. And for HIEs, there's really no compelling reason for them to participate in a RIO because it kind of counters their whole reason for establishing an HIE, which was to set up competitive barriers to competing IDNs and hospital networks. There's little consistency nationwide. Sustainability of the models for RIOs remains very, very elusive. But the biggest challenge here, though, is that data governance issue. Who owns the data? The liability of moving that data? Who's liable if that data gets exposed? So we'll introduce health banks. Are health banks the answer? Certainly, they're consumer-controlled, but they're government-sponsored. It's kind of a hybrid. And they really look at tackling the ownership issues by letting the consumer manage access. rights to the health record bank. The consumer takes on the liability. It's no longer any particular entity. So they define the access rights of the health data, but the health data, when it goes into a health record bank, it's unalterable. The consumer can't screw around with it. The same is true for those other I was talking about, Google Health and Health Vault. You can add notes to it, annotate it, but you cannot alter the health data. And also, they have a clear audit trail. Washington State went live this week. I saw it in the news. I think it was Monday. They announced that they were going live this week. They're doing a demo project of the health bank. This is the first time I've heard of anyone really doing this in any large form. They are using Google Health in one locale, and they're using Microsoft Health Vault in two other locales. The big question here is, will other states follow? Will it stick? And lastly, consumer engagement. Okay, so you create a health bank. Are the consumers going to go there and actually use it? You know, that's the problem with the health bank. You still have to get the consumer engaged. So how do we get the consumer engaged to get that data moving, flowing around? Okay, so is mobile the key to engagement? I am a big proponent or a big fan of things mobile right now. I just think there's tremendous opportunity, and there's been a really, really untapped market need here that is just exploding. I listened in on the this week, Apple introduced the version 3 of its OS for the iPhone. They announced it on Tuesday, and they had a bunch of numbers that they quoted. They have 800 million apps have been downloaded from the application store since the iPhone 3G was introduced 8 months ago. 800 million. Almost a billion applications, folks. That's a very, very, very big number. And it's not even a year. They've sold almost 14 million iPhone 3Gs. They've had 800,000 downloads of the software development kit. They've now got about 25,000 applications, 24,000. Well, I said over 20K here. They said yesterday that it was 25,000. So it's 25,000 applications on the iPhone. And I've gone on and counted, just looking by pages, how many are devoted to. They have a medicine community, and they have a health and wellness community. The medicine community, obviously, is focused for doctors. Some very cool apps there, by the way. And then they have the health and wellness, which have some other cool apps. There's over 1,000 now apps today just focused on the healthcare space. And people are using these applications. So you begin to wonder, okay, is this a way that we can engage the consumer on a daily basis? Health is not what happens when you're sitting in front of a computer opening up your health record. Health occurs in your day-to-day activity. Whether you show up at a doctor says, what meds are you on? Okay, you pull up your iPhone, pop, 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 here we go. Here's my med list, and here are my dosages. Boom, it's done. An interesting app that was demoed yesterday was Johnson & Johnson's LifeScan division demoed an app for diabetes. Glucose monitor from LifeScan, do the pinprick, does the measurement, Bluetooth to the iPhone, tells you your insulin level, track and trend it, also helps you to develop a meal plan based on that insulin level, and also what you have, and also you can report it to your physician. Pretty cool. So I believe this may be the opportunity to directly engage the consumer, because health occurs where you are, not where the computer is. And the last little point here, I really believe we're right now, it's still the mHealth is only at 1.0. A lot of the apps are really crude, really messy, don't leverage the full capabilities. We're going to see a lot of innovation here. So quick, all analysts love to do forecasts. So here's my forecast. Okay, generation one were the isolated PHRs. Gen two, where we got online. First one that came online was in 2000. We're now looking at the health clouds forming. That's gen three, where we get the data aggregated and serving up in these health clouds. And lastly is the Gen 4, which I call personal, actionable, and connected. And it's really the convergence of that mobile capability. You know, start looking at genetics. You start looking at this is the patients like me down here at the bottom. You know, it's about me. It's by me. It's with me. It's for me. That's what it's all about, folks. So, my picture didn't come through. Okay, what to watch? Watch the traction of the platform plays. Those are the big health clouds. Look what Google and HealthVault are doing. What kind of data sources are they getting that data from? Are they starting to tap into HIEs and RIOs? Also, consumer adoption. What subgroups of the population, specific disease communities, are really starting to use these in an aggressive fashion? Developer adoption. Now, look at how much of a developer community builds around these clouds. That's really going to tell you how viable those clouds will be long-term. And really track what's happening on the mHealth side, the mobile health. Final thoughts, liquid lab and medication data is where it begins. If you look at HIEs, if you look at RIOs, if you look at what Google Health did when it first went live, all of them really focused on meds, getting med lists in there for the consumer, or what meds are they taking, and labs. And when you talk to any physician, particularly when you talk to ER physicians, if someone shows up in ER that is unconscious, if they've got access to their labs and their meds, they've got a good idea of what's going on and what to do. So lab data is critical here. It's also, and it's easy to go live because most of it can be digital, and there's fairly quick payback. On the medication side, it's lower ADEs, adverse drug events. On the lab side, it's reduced redundancies in terms of lab tests. Without consumer engagement, HIT adoption is dead on arrival. And what I mean by that, I did some back-of-the-envelope calculations for the big stimulus bill, the $19 billion, going to physicians to get them to adopt EMRs, or as they put it in the legislation, EHRs. When you actually do the calculations and look at the productivity hit that physicians will face in adopting EHR technology and gaining that $44,000 back from the government for doing meaningful use of an EHR, after 5 years, they're $80,000 in the hole. It is not a good business decision for a physician. We have to have another forcing factor. That forcing factor needs to be the consumer who goes into a physician's office and says, I want my records, I want them digital, I want to communicate with you by email securely, and I want to be able to do my appointments online and do my refills online. And give me my labs digitally. That is what's going to drive adoption. That's what's going to change the equation. Lastly, the government-sponsored National Health Information Network, I believe, is folly at this point. I really do believe that the health clouds will reign on the NHIN parade. Thank you. Should I take a question, or do I have time? Okay. Any quick questions, or just want to?
There's a joke reverberating through the web, which is to say that Microsoft ought to manufacture a vacuum cleaner. So they would have one product that doesn't suck. And you talked about Health Vault, and then you talked about Google. Yep. Everyone understands Google brings products to market that simply don't work, and you just sort of wait there until they get it right. Yeah. I'm just wondering, and also Microsoft aligning with health systems, which we know tend to be ponderous and largely can't roll out new applications. So with that kind of context, and certainly my sort of visceral response to Microsoft versus Google, I look at that and I say, well, just wait. And I'm just wondering whether this antipathy toward Microsoft will transfer to their health initiatives in the long run, catch them up. And so that's just my sort of visceral response to that.
Well, that's why I kind of talked about Google Health, I think, is going to move towards a healthy consumer model. They're going to be dealing more with healthy consumers. that just want to do simple management of their health records via the CCR. They talk about they're developing to other standards, but they're really not moving very quickly. I believe in using both applications. I've got a Google Health account. I've got a Health Vault account. I find them both very interesting, very different. I love the Google interface. It's wonderfully simplistic, but it's only structured data, and it drives me nuts. I cannot enter my insurance provider and number, so I can do eligibility checking and, you know, when I'm sitting in a physician's office. I cannot put in my advanced directives. I cannot annotate or enter any notes or journaling as to my health, or say if I take a medication that didn't really work out because of these side effects. Can't do any of that in Google Health. And they've made no talk about doing that, which is unfortunate because I think there is a need there. But it's an elegant interface. It's very simple to use. It's beautiful. It's Google. You know, Google does that very well. You go to Health Vault, it's cumbersome. It's, God. You know, I know the chief architect, Sean Nolan, at Health Vault, and he and I talk about every other week about one issue or another. And even out, he's originally from the Boston area, so we also talk Red Sox, of course. But, he says, we're working on it, John. We're working on it. We got, you know, to get into Health Vault and start doing things, it's no longer 13 screens you have to go, clicks you have to go through. It's now we're down to 8. I'm like, Sean, I'm at 3 at Google Health. Please, you know, we've got to simplify this. So they are working on it. It remains to be seen. But I think what's really important when you look at what they're doing, you know, they've got KP, Kaiser Permanente, they're working with to allow those that use Kaiser Permanente service, you know, services and are a member of Kaiser Permanente, if they wish, they can export their records that are in the KP tethered PHR to Health Vault. That's nice, that portability. They've also got an agreement with Aetna. They've got an agreement with the United Health Group. Now, they've got some big partners. They've got Cleveland Clinic. And another interesting thing that Health Vault did that, you know, I mentioned was the biometric devices, which I thought was brilliant. And the American Health Association actually developed a little widget for tracking blood pressure for heart disease. They now have over 25,000 consumers today using that widget daily to take a blood pressure measurement. And they're tracking and trending their blood pressure. That's a lot of, you know, it's small. It seems very small, 25,000. But you have to remember, this has only been out about a year. And not a tremendous amount of marketing around that yet. So yeah, you kind of have to look at, okay, that's why I said, you know, watch how consumers are using the apps, watch the developers and who's developing applications on top of the clouds. That's going to tell you how these things are trending. One more? Is that okay? Or should we? It's up to you. Hold it off? Okay. Okay, we're going to hold off on questions. You can always catch up with me. I'll be around. And I'll be on the panel, yes, and I'll be at the break.